just all that stuff can be daunting. You always partner up with people that you can learn and grow from, in my opinion.
Great advice.
You all have to have something that you add to the plate, something different and unique.
Well, welcome back. This is Robert Schein, your host with Madison Evans. Hi, Madison. How are you today?
Hi, Rob. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm really excited. This is season 2, episode 3. We've got a really exceptional guest today, Chef Virginia Dahlbeck. Mm-hmm. She's got a huge history, very successful in the culinary world, but she's a grinder. She's a trailblazer. So, you know, the theme for the season are women in power, and she exemplifies that, especially mm-hmm. in a male-dominated culinary world. I think we're seeing a lot of this play out in this season.
Right.
We're following along on all our episodes, and we're bringing basically just, you know, powerhouses to the table. So mm-hmm. today is no different than just that. She's got a great history with Chef Ramsay in Hell's Kitchen. She was season 2 runner-up. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows her from there, but she's also a small business owner, and she is going to take us through sort of the ups and downs of owning business, having business partners. So I don't want to give too much away, but please stay tuned and let's get to the episode. Well, welcome, Chef Virginia. We are so excited for you to be with us on our few podcast. Madison, we've got a great guest today. I can't wait to find out sort of how you've been able to dominate and thrive in sort of a boys club of sorts. It's sort of our theme for our second season, Women in Power.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So we want to always start off with, tell us a little bit about yourself, your history. How'd you get into the culinary background? Was it something you grew up with? Is it something that you were passionate about from day one? Give us a little bit of a sense of who Virginia is.
Everybody always asks me the question of how I got into culinary, and I have a very simple answer. It was a very brief discussion I had with my sister one day. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was just taking random classes at the College of the Desert when I graduated high school. I had zero guidance. I just signed up for classes I was interested in, which there was singing, acting, a couple other, I don't even remember now. Somehow I was just like, this isn't going anywhere. I'm not even taking, like, I needed a plan. And my sister said, why don't you go to culinary school? You love to cook. And I didn't even know what culinary meant, to tell you the truth. I was 18 and had no idea what that word meant. And yeah, she's like, you should go to culinary school. You love to cook. You're the only one that cooks at home. And I was like, you know what? I actually am the only one that cooks at home. And I got all kind of like huffy and puffy about it. I remember one year in high school, my mom and my sister actually gave me a rubber spatula and like a whisk for Christmas when I want like clothes and like a pager. And I got like a rubber spatula and a whisk. It was so funny. But you know what? I was like, you know what? I will. I'll give culinary a try. I signed up there at the College of the Desert. Started going to culinary, became an honor roll student. And I'd never been an honor roll student. I never really got good grades. I was always like an average student. But I found something that I was really passionate about, something I really liked, just stuck with it. I ended up transferring from College of the Desert because I just got sick of living in the desert and kind of wanted to get away from some ex-boyfriends at the time. So I transferred up to Santa Barbara to the culinary program there. However, not a lot of the classes were transferable, so I just started all over. And again, I was an honor roll student there, got scholarships from the James Beard Award, and just kept going. I got to meet Julia Childs. She lived in Montecito. She came down. We got to cook for her a couple times in the gourmet dining room. From Santa Barbara, moved to Los Angeles, met all my business partners organically at that point, and it all stemmed from there.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. A great story of resilience. And when you were going through culinary school, what was your plan? Like, did you know you wanted to open your own restaurant?
No, my plan, Madison, I was not interested in opening my own restaurant. I was interested in having my own cooking show. But in order back then, you know, in the 2000s, early 2000s, anybody who had a cooking show had a restaurant or a cookbook, an established cookbook. So I just figured, you know, I need to open up a restaurant if I want my cooking show one day, and found business partner, my friends that wanted to open up a restaurant, and we kind of got in it that way. But when I was in culinary school, my goal was to have my own cooking show. I used to pretend have my own cooking show in my kitchen when I was growing up, bored, and would just mess around in the kitchen. And that's kind of how I got motivated and why I wanted to have, that's how I got inspired to want my own cooking show. And that can still happen. We'll see.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love cooking. You know, growing up, my mom's Italian. So she would always bring the family together for every holiday, but just about every night. I mean, cooking was always in my household. So the smells and the senses, and what I love about sort of cooking, and I do that, you know, both my wife and I both do that, but I love cooking is because it brings all of your senses together, right? And that's the, so your sense of touch, your sense of smell, sight. And in order to create an impressionable memory, the most senses you could add in on one particular moment in time, the more it's anchored into your long-term memory. So I always wanted to, you know, have that for my children. So I'm a big time barbecuer. I've got basically every tool and gadget and barbecue you can think of. And I'll have to get you some of my legendary Uncle Bob's desert dust. Funny thing is my son and I during quarantine created Quarantini Boys. So we created, online, it was a little like 1 minute internet sensation. since we were all sort of, you know, quarantining together, in lockdown, we basically dressed up and made our own episodes and some of them went viral and it was fun. And my only goal was not to sort of do the show, but to capture our favorite family recipes. And so I said, listen, if I could just capture that just for my own family, for my kids long-term, but it kind of turned into something kind of a lot of fun. And obviously quarantine was over. So we got to bring it back again. It'll be fun. And we'll do a show.
That's hilarious. Quarantini Boys.
I'll send you the link.
It's really cute.
And it's kind of, it was a good little project to do when everyone just sitting around doing nothing.
Right. I was teaching my daughter phonics. So,
oh, there you go.
That was fun.
Yeah, exactly.
That was challenging. It's funny how I can, I learned in that moment that I'm sometimes nicer to my employees than I am to my own child, which I had to work on. Be more patient with my child. Like I'm nicer to my staff than I am to like my child.
It does take some patience with your own kids. And we're definitely hard on our children too. I think it's going to serve them well in the end. So Virginia, tell us about, you've had a wonderful history. You're a small business owner. You've got business partners. You've been a trailblazer of many, many, many ways. And you did speak to and refer to the fact that you wanted your own cooking show. But even, you know, and I see that in your future for sure, but even, you know, steps on the way to that, you were on Hell's Kitchen, you know, season two runner up, and you gave Gordon Ramsay a run for his money, I hear. so tell us about that experience.
I always say my experience on Hell's Kitchen was the best of times, it was the worst of times, because I was on the chopping block every single night of service except one time. And that's a lot. And I still made it to like the final episode. I would win all of the challenges. So in Hell's Kitchen, if you haven't seen it, there's nights of service and there's days that you have a challenge. You have to do this challenge. If you lose, you have to like iron 1,000 pairs of socks and like just random stupid stuff. Sorry, not socks. It's more like napkins. I was just thinking something random, but it's like dinner napkins, which 1,000 isn't that many. It was like 20,000. You had to do some grunting work. And if you won, you got to go out with Gordon Ramsay pretty much, go shopping with him, go to dinner, go on a helicopter, go on a yacht, do a bunch of different things. So I got to see both sides of it. I got to see all the fun stuff. And then I got to be like devastated on the chopping block and have to like fight for my life, you know, on the nights of service. It was really, really, it was a great experience. Would I do it again? Yes and no, because I'm starting to learn about putting myself into certain situations that I don't really have to anymore. It was really challenging. It was really uncomfortable at certain times. I grew a lot from it, but it was really tough. It was really nerve wracking. I had to push through it. You know, it wasn't like Top Chef where it's a much different situation where there's not as much drama. They don't want that much drama. That television channel really wants to set up their candidates or their competitors for success and make them shine. Hell's Kitchen, I felt like wasn't really like that a lot. Like there was a lot of creating really unrealistic situations like blind preps. Like the first night we're supposed to prep all these items and have dinner service. And we didn't even know where anything was going. We had zero training basically is what it was. And then Gordon Ramsay's like, you can't do this. You can't do that. How are you going to run your own restaurant if you can't even do that? And you're not allowed to say, well, you guys didn't train us. You're like, you can't like give them any logical explanation. You just go like, yes, chef. thought that was kind of unrealistic. And one thing that I would do is I would flirt with Gordon Ramsay because it was an insecurity of mine. I would be insecure. So I thought flirting was the way to get my way. I've learned really quickly that's not the way. I've learned through other working with other men and other alphas and people that think they know more than you and do most of the time in some situations. I think it's really good to use humor and respect. It's also really good to understand the food chain, understand that you've got to shut your mouth and work your way up and, you know, do all the grunt work and just be humble about it and push your way through. Yeah, I just really felt like on Hell's Kitchen, like looking back, like it's a little embarrassing to see like the little flirtation things I would do here and there, which at the time, 25 years old, didn't know the impact of how foolish and that would make me look, in my opinion. But also I did make up to it in a lot of other ways, but it's just interesting to hear like people that watch the show, their feedback. Until this day, I get feedback about like, oh, you only got to the end because you flirted and all this stuff, which was, you know, upsetting. But I, you know, I made myself look that way. So I had to figure out, you know what, that didn't work in that situation. I didn't like how that made me look. So I need to figure out something different. And throughout my career and training and working for other companies and, you know, when you're brand new and you're training to be an assist, like the sous chef, and your boss tells you to go tell these 15 line cooks that are all men that have been working there for 25 years, there's a slight language barrier, go tell them to do line sweeps or go ask them to clean something. You got to figure out how you're going to get through to these guys or to anybody for that matter. And I think just getting to know somebody before you start asking, telling them what to do really helps. And when I say getting to know them, I'm not saying sit down and have lunch with them. I'm saying, hey, you know, hey, Rob, hi, Madison, how are you? How are you today? Like ease it in a little slowly, getting to know somebody before you start to tighten the braces and let them know, you know, what you want from them boss-wise.
If you're enjoying the podcast, we have a really exciting announcement. February 7th of 2025, we're having a one-day event at the Omni Rancho Las Palmas in Rancho Mirage, California. It's an amazing event centered around everything that we've talked about in the podcast, from female financial empowerment to wellness empowerment. Some of the guests that we've had on the podcast already will be at the summit, so it'll be a chance for you to see and hear from them again. You can purchase tickets at cw3confidencesummit.com, and we hope to see you there. And back to the podcast. I'm interested in how you got the opportunity to go on Hell's Kitchen and why you decided to go on it.
I was living in New York City, working for Mario Batali. My friend saw an advertisement on Craigslist for a show called Hell's Kitchen. Auditions on a Monday. I was off on a Monday. It just happened organically where I went on a Monday. I waited basically 4 hours for them to interview me for 15 minutes. And it was a very long process. It was basically a 3-month long process of interviewing, personality tests. They flew me out from, I was in New York, like I said, to LA. Did another whole like 2-day thing with production. They do a lot of screening, drug tests, psychological tests. Fox goes through the ringer to make sure they know exactly who you are when you represent their network. So I was just, I thought it was an area in Manhattan, you know, because there is an area called Hell's Kitchen in Manhattan. I didn't know, I'd never heard of it. You can't stream things back then. Yeah. I mean, like I just bought his cookbooks like to figure out who he was at that time and to do some research in history. And it just kept going and going and going. And I ended up getting on the show 2 days after I got back from my honeymoon at the time when I was married. I used to be married. So it was like, literally like, they're like, you might have to cancel your wedding. And I was like, because they didn't know. They're like, you might have to choose going on Hell's Kitchen over your wedding date. Yeah. And I was like, that's fine. I actually said that. I was like, that's cool. We can be flexible on the wedding. I mean, weddings can be rescheduled. It costs a lot of time and money, but they can be rescheduled. TV shows, not so much. I mean, true. Obviously, yeah. Yes, but
once in a lifetime, it was an opportunity.
I couldn't resist. So yeah, it just kept going, kept going, kept going. I got on it and I was on it for 28 days. They filmed 28 days in a row.
Wow.
With 2 days off. They purposely exhaust you. They put you in uncomfortable situations. But yeah, I was like, I remember sitting waiting for like 4 hours for them to interview me. And they're like, this is not an open call for any models, actors. This is not a reality show. Like, this is not like, you have to cook. You have to be working at a restaurant right now in a kitchen, blah, blah, blah. And, and they're like, raise your hand if you're working in a kitchen. I'm like, I am working for Mario Batali. I was like, so proud of that back then.
That's awesome. It's a great experience.
Thank you.
So Virginia, you're a small business owner. You moved to Texas. Texas is also, you know, coming from California, going to Texas. That's a thing too, right? There's a good old boys club, especially when you're in there. And now you're going to, you know, now you have thriving restaurants, 7 restaurants, 2 in development. So you have a total of 9, but it just didn't start out that way so easily and quickly. Share a little bit about your journey when you went from California and went to Texas.
Yeah, moving from California to Texas was a little bit of a shock. It was hard to be living in Los Angeles and move to a small town in Texas. But it's okay because I knew I could always travel back to California and travel where I wanted to go as long as I could make money. And that's why I moved to Texas, to have a career and have an income. And it just blew up. It was the right time. It was the right place. And I mean, we opened up our first Cork and Pig Tavern on an American Express card that had a $30,000 limit.
Oh, that's great.
Wow.
And so I was an operator, meaning I was boots on the ground. I was working on the floor, on the schedule, hiring, firing, you know, working the room. But now, fast forward to 14 years later, and I'll go back to it. Don't worry. I won't leave any of the, I won't leave it all out. But now I'm not an operator anymore. I have regional operators. Every restaurant has a general manager. So I get to do the fun stuff right now. I get to, you know, pick out all the art and the music and the wine that goes inside the building. I don't have to deal with any of the headaches. It's funny because I have a culinary background, but my business partner is the executive chef of our company, which is interesting. It's humbling. That was kind of tricky for me to thumb around with when you have 3 business partners. So 4 owners total, there's 4 right ways to do something.
Right.
It's kind of hard to figure out who, what is the right way? And it takes a lot of maturity. And it takes a lot of keeping your emotions out of it and keeping your eye on the prize, and keeping a goal and a plan in mind, you know, growing a company. Who has a role? Stay in your lane. I don't think anybody would want to work for 4 owners at all. And you go into your shift and you have 4 different owners telling you 4 different things. It's confusing. So we've really learned this past 14 years being business partners together of who's really settled into what, who's good at what, and just stay in your lane and also have some fun with it. I don't work my ass off anymore. Yeah. I don't. I delegate. I'm at that point now where I can delegate. I can spend time with my child. I can do fun podcasts like this. You know, I play pickleball. I'm able to have fun hobbies. I'm not in the restaurant 55 hours a week anymore. I was, you know, I missed out on birthdays. I missed out on holidays. I missed out on weddings. I missed out on bachelorette parties because that's just how the restaurant industry is. You work nights and weekends and you don't really have 5 other people that can cover a shift for you if you want to go out of town on a weekend, you know? So you got to really thrive under pressure. You got to really love the restaurant industry to work nights and weekends, you know? It takes a lot out of you.
That's fantastic. You know, you put in the work and the heavy lifting and the grind and the 24/7 aspect of blood, sweat, and tears when you first start out. I mean, that's
like totally. 100%.
Yeah. In any career. And now what you've done is you've delegated, you've built a network of support, right? You've got the business partners.
100%.
You understand sort of who stays in what lane and you guys can leverage off each other's talent and complement each other. When you know, and that's the name of the game.
And then we can have a fun time raising our families and stuff because we all have children and, you know, we want to be able to have that time, you know, with our children and not just be like, oh, I was in the restaurant industry all my life. I never had my kids grow up like, my mom was never around. She was always working at the restaurant. You know, I just didn't want it to be like that. I wanted, you know, give somebody else, pass the baton, give somebody else in their 30s or somebody that's in a different point in their life that doesn't want to have that quality of life. Go do it. Go work the 55 hours a week for us in a good company where you have a name and you're not just a number and you have an opinion and you have a voice. So
that's fantastic. Yeah. And I love how you're putting family first, right? You built up the bit, what I call business inertia, right? Now you've got it, that energy moving in the right direction, and mm-hmm. you've got a great team around you, and you understand now you're doing what you want to do and like to do versus what you have to do. And they delegate the rest. And I think for small business owners and business owners in general, there's this evolution that happens when you're owning your own business. And someone said this to me years ago that, Robert, you're going to understand what it's like to be an owner operator when you understand the difference between working in the business and working on the business. Mm-hmm. And the more you spend time working on the business versus in the business is when you're going to flip the script. So you have to carve out, and I would carve out days of office hours where I would go off of, you know, outside the office during my week schedule, and I would work on the business, every aspect of it. And then you build that blueprint and you build a plan and you work that plan. And then the more times you start to work that business plan that you've created for yourself, the more you can free yourself up, that you're playing to your team's skill set and where mm-hmm. everyone's winning. And I think that was the evolution and turning point for me. And that's when you just start building some significant momentum.
Yeah, you become like a visionary all of a sudden.
A lot of fun.
A visionary entrepreneur versus somebody who's like creating systems and teaching the systems and following through with the systems. That's already taken care of. Now you can expand and grow and become a visionary.
You know you're successful when you don't have to be in the office. Doesn't mean you're not necessarily working on the business or working in general, but you don't have to be in the office for the business to continue. And that's when you've been very successful in terms of creating something that can basically continue and everyone can do what they need to do. And the business gets done. The clients are looked after and taken care of as if you were there or not there. And not to make yourself, you want to basically create yourself out of a job, but that's when you know, because, you know, we're all control freaks, right? We're all sort of, you have to release that control and understand that you have to build in the right people, build the right culture, and ultimately trust. Mm-hmm. And then you have to get good at firing and hiring. You hire slow and fire fast. You hire slow and fire fast. That's one of the things I've learned as a small business owner too. Yep.
But you said it right. You said that it's the culture, Rob. And that's really what it is. And I also do all the first interviews for my managers, because when I interview somebody, it's kind of like what we're doing now. We're getting to know each other. I'm not asking any annoying profit and loss questions. I'm not asking a general manager or a regional manager, what was your most stressful shift? How did you learn? What did you learn from it? How did you move forward? Because I actually already know the answer. It's Mother's Day. No, so after I can see that this person has the same moral character and values, then I pass them on to my regional manager. And then that process goes on from there. And, we all get fooled too. Sometimes you're hiring like the best person in the world and they're like amazing. And, you know, we all get duped. We all get tricked. We all learn from that. Hopefully you start to see the signs here and there from somebody, patterns and stuff, and not to repeat them, like, of, you know, that they weren't going to fit into your culture. They're not going to fit into your morals, your values. You know, sometimes we overlook it because we can get kind of lazy or busy, but we always learn at the end, Robin Madison. It always comes around. Just give it time.
The
truth will come out.
That's true. One of my favorite hiring questions, Madison knows this, but maybe you've used it. If not, you can. At the end of the interview, I always ask, what's your favorite movie? Like, you know, and that it tells everything about somebody's personality.
It's a good question.
So Virginia, what's your favorite movie?
Oh, well, see, the first thing that pops up in my mind would be Tommy Boy.
Yes.
But I also love Happy Gilmore. But I also love a movie that I just thought about the other day called Baghdad Cafe.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Baghdad Cafe.
I haven't seen that.
I mean, and that's just a movie that not a lot of people know about. It's just so random. It's so tight and cold that when little parts of love and humor and empathy come into it, it just makes you so happy because you're just needing it. Like the balance of it, it's just unique. There's nothing else like this movie. It's just a really interesting movie. And that's kind of just so funny because it's complete opposite of like mindless Tommy Boy, Happy Gilmore stuff.
Well, what you just said to me means that we could work together, because mine are, you know, if somebody says Dumb and Dumber, Step Brothers, Tommy Boy, anything of the sorts, you know, it's game on. So we love that. What was yours, Madison? Thank What's you. Your favorite movie?
That's a hard question because there's so many good ones. I love A Star Is Born that has Lady Gaga in it.
Oh, that was good.
That one is good.
That is good. Safe answer. Doesn't tell me too much about your personality, but it's a good one.
Well, I mean, the music in there, they're like really touches your soul when she hits those high notes. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, the music is so good in that movie.
That is a great movie.
Yeah, the music's really good in Baghdad Cafe. There's only like a couple songs in the movie, but like they can make you start tearing up. You're like trying to hide it on the airplane. You're like, ah.
One that I love is The Greatest Showman. Talk about a soundtrack you could keep playing. There you go.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Best in Show. That's a good one.
Oh, there you go. Madison, have you seen Best in Show?
I don't think
she has, right? It's a generational. So she's going to it's a homework assignment.
Okay, I'll watch it.
Best in Show is just another one of those where you're like, where's this going? What is it? What's happening? Only a few
it's
people
fantastic.
In the world understand this kind of humor. It's really funny.
Yeah, that's a great one. And in fact, they just had the National Dog Show on Thanksgiving. And a pug.
Oh, I know. And I didn't watch it.
A pug won. We own two pugs. So
really?
pug is the dog of the year.
Mm.
Nice. Good old pug.
Should put your pug in it next year.
No, my pug would not even come anywhere close to. You have to have they have standards for something like that. That's not even happening.
Don't talk about your pug like that.
Oh, I'll let you spend some time with our pugs and they bark at everything. So yeah.
I have five That's dogs funny. That I had to bribe just now just to start this interview because I didn't want them barking or spazzing out while we were talking. But yeah, I have
what
five
kind of dogs?
Dogs. I have a Chihuahua, a Pitbull, and then three white Pomeranians that are all different sizes and personalities.
Why is it you always see the mix of a Chihuahua and a Pitbull by the same owner?
I know. Isn't that funny?
That's crazy.
I don't know. I know. It's so funny. And we adopted both the Chihuahua and the Pitbull, but I might have shopped around for the Pomeranians.
We have two pugs and two labs.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I'm not the only crazy person that wants so many dogs.
This episode is brought to you by Blanky Shine Wealth Management. Serving the Coachella Valley for the first 40 years and built for the next 40 years. And for more information about Blanky Shine, it's blankyshinewealthmanagement.com.
How and why did you decide to start your first restaurant? Because I'm sure it was very daunting to go from working in restaurants to deciding to start your own restaurant.
How and why? I mean, my business partner, one of the three business partners, he really had the passion for it. His parents always had a restaurant in San Angelo. So we went and looked there. We found a space where they literally give you money back once you open up your first business in this space. And it just worked out organically. It was really, being inspired and motivated by my business partners. One of my business partners was like the ringleader in the whole thing. Cause like I told you, I did want to do the restaurant thing, but it's overwhelming just to open up a restaurant. You need five different kind of permits before you even get your certification of occupancy. Mm-hmm. You know, just all that stuff can be daunting. But that's why you always partner up with people that you can learn and grow from, in my
opinion.
Great
advice.
You all have to have something that you add to the plate. Something different and unique.
That's great advice.
Network of support.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's growing your network. Fantastic.
And you all kind of have to have different personalities, because if you get five directors in one place, it's going to be crazy. You get five alphas in one place. You got to kind of figure out how to make your wolf pack come together.
Virginia, let me ask you this. For any young woman or person wanting to get into your field today, what advice would you provide?
I would definitely say give it a chance. Give it at least 2 to 3 years of working your butt off and really figuring it out. I would also say that it's not like the Food TV Network. It's not like Bravo. It's not glamorous. I mean, it's hard. It's grueling. It's kind of like when you go to watch a play, you only see the stage, right? That's the dining room floor. But there's a whole production out back that's going on that's a secret to the viewers. It's kind of like that. It's a lot of hard work, but you have to have a passion for it and you have to thrive under pressure. It can't just be this fantasy that you have that you want to be Martha Stewart because you saw her on the she has a cool show on TV. It's not like that at all. And if you ever watched her documentary too, she went through a lot of stuff. So You got to really have perseverance. You have to keep going. You're going to have hard days. Learn from your mistakes. Keep your ego out of it and just push forward and give yourself some grace.
That's excellent. Great advice.
I hope so. I don't know.
That was excellent.
Can I do that again? Just kidding.
Well, Chef Virginia Dahlbeck, it's been an honor and a privilege and a pleasure today. Thank you for your time today. I think our audience learned a lot. You had a lot of great inspirational sort of advice. Journey is very unique and different. That's why we're doing this podcast, but we're honored to have you with us. So we appreciate that. And we're all looking forward to going to, you know, your restaurants in Texas. And I know I am.
Yeah, they sound great.
Yeah, thank you.
So Chef Virginia, since this is for you, we got a Julia Child quote. You've met Julia Child, but this is a great one. And she said, drama is very important in life. You have to come on with a bang. You never get to go out with a whimper. Everything can have drama if it's done right, even a pancake.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. So with that, I leave you today. Thanks again. Like and subscribe, share with friends and family. And we really appreciate all of your time today. We'll see you again next time.
This podcast is brought to you by David Field Producer. It is produced and directed by David Field and Kristen George. And it's mix, edit, and socials by Kristen George. Blanky Shine Wealth Management is a group of investment professionals registered with Hightower Services, LLC, member FINRA and SIPC, and with Hightower Advisors, LLC, a registered investment advisor with the SEC. Securities are offered through Hightower Securities, LLC. Advisory services are offered through Hightower Advisors, LLC. This is not an offer to buy or sell securities. No investment process is free of risk, and there is no guarantee that the investment process or the investment opportunities referenced herein will be profitable. Past performance is not indicative of current or future performance and is not a guarantee. The investment opportunities referenced herein may not be suitable for all investors. All data and information referenced herein are from sources believed to be reliable. Any opinions, news, research, analysis, prices, or other information contained in this research is provided as general market commentary. It does not constitute investment advice. Blanky Shine Wealth Management and Hightower shall not in any way be liable for claims and make no expressed or implied representations or warranties as to the accuracy or completeness of the data and other information or for statements or errors contained in or omissions from the obtained data and information referenced herein. The data and information are provided as of the date referenced. Such data and information are subject to change without notice. This document was created for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed are solely those of Blanky Shine Wealth Management and do not represent those of Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates.